Deep in the jungles of the Amazon, an adorable ball of fluff clings to a tree branch, lapping up delicious ants. The pygmy silky anteater clearly has sloths as a role model, and it shows in their laid-back nature. But moving slowly and eating sparingly take a toll, and this carefree lifestyle comes at a cost, particularly for an anteater. But keeping a cool head when the heat turns up is the way to sway here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It's your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cassie for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cassie's music, please search Cassie Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And thank you to Johanna for the creation of this week's artwork. To check that out, you can visit us at our home on the web at ldtaxonomy.com. And a very special thank you to our patrons, to Jesse Raspolich, Carol Raspolich, Richard Caspar, Lottie and Aubrey, Gray Hughes, and Wednesday Rabbit. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on.
And today we're talking about the smooth jazz of tree critters. But more on that later.
Silky smooth.
Are talking about the silky anteater.
Yeah, pygmy it silky is. Anteater.
Yeah, so do you have other names for it?
I do. It's cotton sloth and the pocket size snuggle smith. Cuz I want to snuggle with it. And he fits in my pocket.
Snuggle smith is good cuz it looks like Snuffleupagus. It looks like it's not Hanna-Barbera.
A Jim Henson.
Jim Henson, yeah. Production.
It's like that have you seen Fantastic Beasts and Where to Farm Them?
Yes.
And he has that little, like, platypus echidna that steals people's stuff.
Yes.
It's like that.
It is like that. It also looks like Gonzo, I think.
it looks like Gonzo. That's where the Jim Henson thing came from.
Would you like to know what science calls it?
Sure.
It's in the kingdom you love, know, and are in the kingdom Animalia. The phylum is Chordata. The class is Mammalia. The order is Pilosa. Very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Because he's so soft.
The family is Cyclopidae. Cyclopididae.
Yeah.
It's Cyclops. The genus is Cyclopes. And the species is Cyclopes Didactylus?
Cyclopes didactylus?
Yeah. So, I'm curious to know if we're doing a critter groups or a nomenclature, because
we have done.
We gotta figure out what.
So, I when I was doing this, I had the feeling that we had just done the giant anteater, like the other day, because it was like, oh, I'm doing another anteater. Like, I just did one. We did that a year ago. Almost a year ago, if we, like, this time next week will be when we recorded the, this time, a year ago next week, there we go, that's when we recorded the giant anteater episode. So, I don't know why I felt like it was so recent, but we talked about the critter
maybe
groups.
Maybe because of the aardvark?
Maybe it was the aardvark.
That's episode 309.
That was more recent.
December 19th.
But no, but I was definitely thinking of the anteater in particular because of the whole jaw and tongue situation. We already talked about the critter groups, the term of venery for an anteater back then. It's a candle. Candle of anteaters. So that means that we are going to do nitty-gritty nomenclature, where I ask you, Joe, a question, and that question is, what is the translation for the binomial nomenclature? Cyclopes Didactylus. So, what does that mean? Does that mean... All right, so is it A, round eyes, two toes, B, one-eyed teacher, C, giant instructor, or D, round-eyed guardian?
What was the second one again?
One-eyed teacher.
And then the first one?
Round eyes, two toes.
I guess round-eyed, two toes.
Final answer?
Final answer.
That is correct. Round eyes, two toes, strong hearts.
I'm on the Wikipedia page. And it is right there, but it's not what you, it's none of the things you said.
Is it right there?
It says two-toed circle foot. So you said two-toed
circle eye.
So that's what I.
No, when I looked up Cyclopes, it said round eyes. So, I don't know.
Well, I was leaning before I even clocked that. I was leaning towards the first two because the didactic one, you're trying to get me on like teacher or something like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
here we are. I figured Cyclops. It's like, does that mean one eye? Why does it say that about this guy? But I'm thinking Cyclops doesn't mean one eye. It's something else.
Yeah, cycle, like a circle.
Yeah.
And then like optic. So cycloptic kind of thing. Circle eye. Which I mean, that's a lot of eyes. It's not super descriptive. And then didactylus. I thought I would get you with didact, but
yeah,
we do talk about the artiodactyla, which has to do with the toes and the hooves. So it is it's toes, and di is two, so it's got two toes, like the two-toed sloth.
Interesting. Well, would you like to know what it looks like?
Yes, very much so.
Silky anteaters are small, tiny little anteaters with short faces and large heads. They measure... I shouldn't tell you that.
Yeah, don't tell me that.
We'll talk about that later. Their fur is dense, soft, and varies from gray to yellow, with a silvery gloss, sometimes... it has darker streaks or lighter in the underbelly, you know? They have black eyes, like a doll's eyes. they have red soles. The soles of their feet are red. And they have two claws on their forefeet, which they use to grip branches, sort of like a sloth.
I love these guys.
They are adorable. And their hind feet have four equal length toes with long claws. Isn't that weird to have like two different numbers of toes on two sets of feet?
Yeah. I guess you just have what you need. Well,
not that crazy. But I said they were tiny. So let's talk about how small. Welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment, the official listener's favorite part of the show. The part of the show when we present the animal size and dimensions in relatable terms through a quiz that's fun for the whole family. It's also part of the show that's introduced by you when you send in audio of yourself saying, singing, or chittering the words measure up into ldtaxonomy@gmail.com. We don't have a new measure up intro this week, but that means we get to hear from an animal, and Carlos gets to guess who it is.
An anteater?
It actually is not an anteater. It's an aardvark, but it was too good to pass up.
Is it Jazzy Arthur?
Jazzy Arthur?
It's the
I'm not familiar with.
I don't know. Is there a jazzy? Is there a jazzy episode of Arthur?
No.
Because he's silky smooth.
Definitively no.
Definitively.
Although I think the Jekyll Hyde episode, like the musical episode, there's a saxophone, so.
That's jazz.
Mm-hmm. You can't play saxophone in any other.
Yeah, you can't play a saxophone without playing jazz. It is an instrument that makes its own genre by being played.
Without further ado, the listener's favorite part of the show.
They don't fool around when they go on a picnic. These are good people. Hey, Ed. What's the matter? You lost, pal? I want to talk to you for a minute. As a matter of fact, I want to talk to you about your future. You know, you're talking to the wrong guy. I'm semi-retired. You know, it takes
what on earth am I listening to?
Just to make a decent sandwich, and I'm having trouble with just one. And
what are you listening to?
Is that another Hanna-Barbera thing?
No, this one is... It's called The Ant and the Aardvark. It is a series of 17 theatrical short cartoons produced by DePatty Fralang Enterprises and released by the United Artists from 1969 to 1971. It's made by the same people that made The Pink Panther. It features a blue aardvark and a red ant. And the guy, the voice that's like, "Hey, Ant, I want to talk to you about your future." That guy, that is the aardvark. And he's got a very long mouth and a very long snout with a tiny little mouth at the end.
I see him.
It's very, that voice is very funny to me for some reason. "I want to talk to you about your future."
It looks so weird.
It's not a cartoon sounding voice.
And the ant is just strung out. He looks really chill.
He did say he was semi-retired.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Interesting. I must have missed that show from my childhood.
In the 70s.
The childhood I definitely had in the 70s.
But let's talk about their length. There's 36 to 45 centimeters, or 14 to 18 inches. Pretty small, considering an anteater is like the giant anteater is
like 7
Doberman
feet long.
Size. How many silky anteaters go into the largest spider web ever? I think we must have done this before, but silk?
Nah, okay. I feel like we must have done this before as well, but I do not remember the answer, so might as well be new.
Well, here's a hint. The largest spider web ever found was created by the Darwin's bark spider, which I think is an alumni.
Yeah, we talked about that guy.
Which is known for producing orb webs of extraordinary size. And the record-breaking web spanned a river in Madagascar. The Darwin's bark spider's silk is also the toughest biological material ever studied.
Yeah, we'll
talk about
the silk.
Adding to the impressive nature of their web-building capabilities.
I'm going to go with 100 feet. So my answer is 66. Silky anteaters go into the length of this very long spider's web.
The correct answer is 54.67 ants. The largest web measured over 82 feet wide.
That is a nursing school victory. I got an 81.8 rounded up to 82. Nice.
Okie dokie. Let's talk weight. They're between 175 to 40 grams. And by 40, I mean 400. 175 to 400, or 62, 6.2 to 14.1 ounces. How many driver ants queens go into the silky ant? How many African driver ant queens would a silky anteater have to eat its weight in African driver ant queens?
Oh, boy. I'm going to assume that they're a tenth of an ounce. No, that's too much. A fit, 5%, 0.05 ounces. 282 is my answer. Did you have a, did you actually not, did I manage to skip the,
Here's a hint. The African driver ant queen is the largest ant in the world.
Mm-hmm. I'm still sticking with it.
At all?
Nope, I'm sticking with it.
Okay.
282. I always underestimate how heavy an ounce is, so.
The correct answer is 198.4 ants.
I'm pretty sure that's not a nursing school victory.
These ants are 2 grams.
No. That means nothing to me.
There are 28.35 grams in an ounce.
So it's about a tenth. If I had gone a tenth, I would have gotten it right.
Dagnabbit.
Yeah. I got 70%. Oh, well.
We could start calling this real estate victory.
Oh, because you need a 75 to pass real estate.
Oh, okay. So like... You can be a realtor, but you can't be a nurse. What if that's
no,
how it
I got
you had to take a hard test?
I got a 70 on that one, that last one. So I can't be anything.
What if you can be a high school graduate?
Yeah. C's get degrees.
Yeah.
You ready?
Would you like to know some fast facts?
Yeah, give us some fast facts.
I was going to say before, like, what if it was you took a test and depending on how well you did on it, determined your job.
That's like how Futurama starts, right? And you don't take a test, but they just kind of like put you on the probulator and then you get your job from that. And you got to do what you got to do.
So let's talk fast facts. Silky anteaters are... native to southern Mexico, Central America, not including El Salvador for some reason, and parts of South America like Ecuador, northern Peru, Bolivia, and Brazil. They are also found in the northern Atlantic forest of eastern Brazil and on the island of Trinidad. I didn't know they were on Caribbean islands. That's interesting. They prefer... semi-deciduous, tropical evergreen, and mangrove forests. These are also, incidentally, my favorite smoothie flavors.
Mango rainforest. That sounds great.
Silky anteaters live in arboreal lifestyle in their dense rainforest homes. They're solitary, and males have larger territories than females. Their diet mainly consists of ants, but they can also eat wasps, termites, and occasionally fruit. They lack certain digestive enzymes that are necessary to digest chitin, as evidenced by the corn kernel-like exoskeletons in their feces. They cannot digest exoskeletons, even though they eat ants.
They pretty much just eat things that have exoskeletons. So it's just like exclusively eating shrimp and then your house is just full of shrimp shells.
Shrimp tails?
Yeah.
Shrimp shells. That's kind of like humans.
Yes. We also can't digest.
Although, have we tried? I don't know.
I feel like we have. Someone has.
They reproduce twice a year with offspring... resembling adults in fur and color. So it's one of those fun situations where the babies are just tiny versions of the adults.
That's they gotta often be so hide. Cute.
They often hide in silk, cotton trees for camouflage and sleep curled up in during the day. When threatened, they adopt a defensive posture. Whatever that does.
I'm just imagining a kung fu stance.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm not even worried about it. I thought they were called silky because they look so like soft and silky. But it's because they live in silk trees. But they, if you look at them, they do look like plush.
A cotton fluff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good camouflage. It's like, oh, there's just a bunch of white puffballs around me. I'm a white puffball. I should do what they do.
But that's all I got.
All right, let the this major fact I'm calling asleep in the heat. So, as we established, silky anteaters are basically sloth moles made out of fluffy cotton, and they actually share some things in common with your typical sloth, and that's for one that they like to hang upside down, they move very slowly, they really only expend extra energy when it's absolutely necessary, like if they're threatened. But then there's the question of how do they get food? Sloths eat leaves, which aren't very nutritious, but they're everywhere in trees. So they can just spend the whole day eating and sleeping. And what do they go? They come down like once a month to go to the bathroom, something like that. It's nuts. But so for larger terrestrial anteaters, those proletariat, they can mosey around and hunt for ants and termites in their mounds, which gives them access to millions and millions of ants, and they can clear out a mound or clear out most of a mound and move on to the next one, and in one feeding session eat tons of ants, and go there pretty consistently. But since our little snuggle spike hardly ever comes down from the trees, it is limited to the ants and bugs and fruit and stuff that it can find in the trees, in the branches. So rather than adapt to eat other kinds of food, its jaw is basically welded shut and it doesn't have any teeth like an anteater. It is adapted to need a lot less food than it otherwise would for something its size. So it has a much lower metabolism, and its body temperature is a lot lower. And that's actually true for all anteaters, is that they run at a lower body temperature. They have the lowest body temperature of any placental mammal. So any mammal that is born with a placenta. I guess as opposed to something like, a platypus or an echidna that's born through an egg or marsupial that is, born underdeveloped and is raised, as Joey. So like where most mammals would have around like our internal body temperature, 98, degrees or 98.6 degrees, they have an internal body temperature of around 90 degrees, which is like a death sentence for most mammals, for us at least. It is crazy how little our body temperature can change and be okay. Like if we go down to 96 degrees, like that is some real hypothermia. And if we go up to 101 degrees, that's an unpleasant fever. So we don't do well with thermoregulation. I mean, we do well with internal thermoregulation, but we wouldn't do well if we couldn't do that. Unfortunately, the silky anteater, I keep wanting to call it a silky sloth because whenever I look at it, it just looks like a little like sloth with just a snuffleupagus snoot coming out of it. So, it also, the silky anteater goes into these states of torpor, like mini hibernations. And this allows it to conserve energy in between feeding sessions. So it's really, the name of the game is just to not do very much unless you're eating. So it doesn't get a lot of food. It doesn't process that food very quickly. It runs colder than most mammals. It hibernates a lot. So it has a hard time regulating its body temperature. And yes, this is a mammal that relies heavily on the environment to regulate its temperature, like a decidedly less cuddly reptile. And this limits where they can live. So I was actually, like, as you were saying that they weren't in El Salvador, I was interested to see, like, what's the highest elevation in El Salvador? Because elevation has a big role to play in temperature. They, at higher elevations, it is just too cold. They cannot stay warm. And so they would freeze if they lived over 1,500 meters above sea level. So you will almost never find silky anteaters at these elevations. So you won't find them up in the Andes. More closer to like the Amazon River Basin, which is the area you described. But they also can't get too hot because then they'll overheat. And they have no way of good and efficient way of cooling down. So they really do have to find that sweet spot. And it's played into their conservation efforts. And it determines where you will find them in the first place. So, and it's been affected by like deforestation in the area. Because they need trees to live in. And that's all I got. It's the big thing is that this is a mammal that needs to externally regulate its heat. And it's also a mammal that can't go places very quickly. So it's not like, oh, it's hot now. Let me go over to this other section of the forest that is cooler or something like that. It's like, no, I'm here for the month. If I want to go to a different part of the forest, that's going to be a Q2 goal, key objective. So if it's cold, it does curl up to sleep in order to conserve heat. But it's just interesting how it runs so cold normally. And all of these adaptations have made it so that it's not really able to regulate its body temperature. And I kind of started to read some like really in-depth research articles on this that were a little bit over my head because I'm not a researcher, and also had a lot to do with blood. So I will leave it at that. It has to do with blood. So many times I hear something, oh, this animal does a cool thing. I hear it on Planet Earth, or I read it in an article or something, or Bibby sends me something cool. And then I find out that the major fact has mostly to do with, like, cardiovascular stuff. And it's like, oh, fine. Of course.
That's where all the blood is. Blah.
But that's it. That's all I got.
That's all I got.
All right. That was the silky anteater. Look at us. I think this is the second episode in a row coming in just around 30 minutes. Crazy. For you out there in podcasting, find a comfy tree. Take lots of naps and practice your thermoregulation like this silky anteater here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Hey, Taxonomy Titans, I just want to remind you that we now have a Patreon, Patrons can see full video episodes and get shoutouts on the show. But ultimately, it's a way for you to help us cover some costs and get even better. Still, reviews are the best way to help us grow. So if you haven't left one yet, we'd really love to hear from you. As always, thanks for listening and engaging.
Life, Death, and Taxonomy is my favorite in the world podcast.
We're on time.